Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Folks, we got a lot to cover today. Big agenda. In the 12:30, we'll visit with Greg McBride, Senior VP and Chief Analyst at Bankrate.com. The Fed Reserve has raised its benchmark interest rate by 25 basis points or a quarter percentage point. Despite the stress that's hitting the banking system, will that facilitate and curb high inflation? We'll talk about that. To start off the 12 o'clock hour, Troy Henry, the developer for Bayou Phoenix. We'll talk about what's going on there. There's a big meeting coming up on Monday evening, a presentation to the public, and we'll talk about that as well. Dr. Joe Cantor joins us in the 11 o'clock hour, the Louisiana State Health Officer. A lot of things to talk about in public health, and we'll cover a lot of those topics during that period of time. And later on in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Trey Bervant, Louisiana Film and Entertainment Association. Got a pretty significant rumor floating around that writers may go on strike. We'll see what he has to offer there. Well, we all know now that the recall election, the petition for the recall has failed. They didn't get the number of signatures required for certification. The response has been interesting. The mayor announces that she intends this in the rearview mirror. And at the same time, she announces that she will reveal more of her thoughts about the recall process, not from the podium, but rather in a book that she describes as having a number of chapters but no title. I don't know about you, but I kind of believe it would be better described as a comic book, maybe titled How to Excel at Being Inept for Dummies. Here to talk about these issues and others, Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL-TV political analyst. Clancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. It's always fun and enlightening to be on your program. Good morning to you and your listeners.
So, your thoughts about the recall and what was revealed on Wednesday?
You know, there are so many takeaways here. I think the two biggest ones are, number one, we all got a huge civics lesson out of this. I'm not taking sides, although, you know, I've been a critic of the mayor for quite some time, but we all got a civics lesson because, you know, people have heard the term recall. They kind of know what it means, but mechanically, I'm going to use that word, mechanically, it requires a lot of parts, a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that have to sync up. And it is not unlike, and this is a conversation you and I had a little over 6 months ago, maybe 7 months ago now, when they filed the petition with the Secretary of State, we both agreed that, you know, to succeed at this, you have to think of it as a campaign. You have to mount a campaign that's every bit as organized and every bit as well-funded and every bit as coordinated as a campaign for citywide office. And if you're trying to recall a mayor, you effectively have to mount a mayoral campaign against the sitting mayor. And that's what they didn't do, but we learned just how difficult it is. over $1.2 million that we know of was spent on this thing, and they still came up way short. Now, there are some questions about the disqualification of 99.9% of the second batch of petitions that were dropped off, but the registrar is making things available this afternoon, and I'm told she's going to make a statement about, you know, the process that was used. And I did some research, and I'm sure you have too. You know, there's a provision in state law that sort of spells out the process for this. And, you know, we can go deeper in the weeds later about that second tranche, and I'm sure you're curious about that, as a lot of people are. But we got a big civics lesson on this, you know, that there are rules and there are laws that most people are generally aware of what the law is on certain things. But this is something that I'll confess I did not know until the Times-Picayune sought copies of the petition under the state law, because that I did not know that a recall petition is public record the minute you put your name on it. Now, personally, I don't think it should be a public record at that point. I think it should be ultimately a public record. That's just my opinion. But the law is the law. We have to follow the law as it is, not as we would like it to be. And, you know, the recallers made a lot of amateurish mistakes, which, if you support the recall, that's a real shame, because, you know, they were going after a mayor who's made a lot of mistakes. And by the end of this process, and this is one of the takeaways, you know, it was like it's a clown car show on both sides. You know, the effort to remove her was every bit as disjointed as the mayor's administration. And if you're going to take out somebody like a mayor, even a mayor who's riddled with scandals and mistakes and bad decisions, you still got to be professional, because any incumbent mayor in a city like New Orleans is still a powerful force. So, and then the other takeaway is, the big takeaway is the state legislature, which controls the law on recalls, needs to do a deep dive into the law. The law is okay as far as it goes. The things that it addresses, I think it addresses with specificity, but there are a lot of areas in this recall effort exposed the gaps in the law, where the law is basically silent across a wide array of things. And I'll quickly touch on some of them. The relationship between the Secretary of State and local registrars. Who's the dog and who's the tail? It's not clear. Most people don't know that the registrars of voters, all of them, are appointed for life. Now, that's the kind of thing that the U.S. Constitution gives only to federal judges. Here we have local officials being appointed for life, and that's the law. Now, it could change, and I'm not saying it should, I'm not saying it shouldn't, but it should at least be discussed. Let's do a deep dive. Let's see what other states do.
Sure.
And I think the lifetime appointment was in the thinking behind that was it would take this person out of the political realm. Maybe, maybe not. I have learned over the years, and I think you would agree with this, every decision you make in life, but especially every decision in politics and governance, it's a double-edged sword. There's nothing that's all good or all bad. Well, very few things are all good or all bad. And there are pluses and minuses to that theory of appointing someone for life. But anyway, but the other thing is, who's in charge of removing a registrar if he or she doesn't do his or her job? And there's at least a prima facie evidence out there, case out there, that Dr. Sandra Wilson, the Orleans registrar, has not really done a good job of maintaining the roles of active voters in New Orleans. They've got thousands and thousands of people, according to at least one respected political consultant's deep dive into it, possibly 30,000 or so people on there who should be on the inactive list and ultimately should be purged because they died or moved or haven't voted in years and years. And the state law is very specific about that, and it doesn't look like it's been followed. So they need to.
You would agree that's all wrapped up in this political ideology of voter suppression. The mayor, I'm glad the mayor is continuing her lawsuit, quite frankly, along those lines.
No, I am too.
Because I think it's going to flush out all the issues that you just described.
And it needs to be clarified. Well, her lawsuit is on, let me think. There's so many lawsuits flying around.
Well, the one relative to what Kyle Ardoin did, you know, on that issue. But my information is that that was based on the results of the previous canvass where this registrar didn't take the necessary actions, the appropriate actions as a result of the findings of the previous canvass. And, you know,
he corrected what he believed was a mistake, but the law doesn't, you know, the law doesn't specifically address that. The law gives him authority to pick the number when the recall petition is filed. It's silent as to whether he can revise that number based upon subsequent information and evidence. I think, you know, you could make an it'd be a good moot court.
Well, but I think I think the law assumes that the precursor work done by the registrar of voters has actually been done. You know, there are a lot of assumptions that are there.
So you can, but I mean, you could make an argument on both sides. You can make an argument, hey, the law doesn't authorize him to do this, but you could also argue that if the law gives him the authority to decide what the number is, it implicitly gives him the authority to revise it based upon evidence. So it's a good argument in either direction. The courts need to clarify it, or perhaps the courts could also punt and say, we're going to rule this way, whatever way they rule, but the legislature really needs to step in and make a statement about that. And the law, and I still don't know the answer. The law puts in there, when it defines the registrar's duties with regard to maintaining the rolls, it specifically says failure to do this is malfeasance. But who removes the registrar? I've heard different people opine on it, and I haven't had a chance to look it up in the law. The city council appoints the registrar when there's a vacancy, but it's an appointment for life. So Dr. Wilson was appointed in 2006, and there's the only person who's still on the council is Oliver Thomas. Nobody else was on the council back then from the present council. So, you know, we need to look at all. That's one thing that they need to look at. They need to look at revising, you know, this 5-day grace period thing. They need to look at the public record aspect. They need to look at the threshold.
Well, the 5-day grace period is that's a joke. I mean, I think
nobody else in the country that I know of that does it.
And I think it's in place to benefit the not the citizens. I think it's to benefit the candidate or the elected official, because it gives them an opportunity that they would have standing for an additional 5 days if this thing is going in a direction that they don't like or against their interests. They get an additional 5 days to go run into court to do something. And
well, not only that, but it gives them a chance. Think about this, Neil. Your background is in elective office and in law enforcement. There are scores of small communities in Louisiana that have. And I'm not picking on police chiefs, but a police chief is a very important position, a very powerful position. Let's just say some small town of, you know, Dubosville or Normanville has a police chief who's a bad guy.
Sure.
You know, and they only got like 1,500 voters, and they want to recall him. If it's a public record, the minute somebody signs it, he can start knocking on doors.
Absolutely.
Can start writing DUI tickets and intimidate people. Now, I'll tell you, I've given this some thought. And I'm not suggesting that this is the one and only solution, but I would revise the law along these lines. I would say that it is not a public record until the registrar is finished with the validation and invalidation process. And instead of a 5-day grace period for people to change their minds, I would require the registrar to publish the entire list online and in the official journals, which would make the newspapers very happy. And I know you don't like that law, but it would be a chance for, you know, a written record of everybody.
I am totally fine with that law.
Publish that. Publish that out there and give like somewhere at least 15 days, maybe 30 days for voters. You know, if you want to do an audit of the validation process, the best audit is to let voters look at it. And then if your name is on it as signing it and you didn't sign, you can say, hey, I did not sign that. Somebody faked my signature. or if you signed it, or let's say I signed it, because neither one of us signed it, but if I signed it and it has me invalid, I can say, hey, wait a minute, I did sign it. What's wrong with it? That is my birth date. That, you know, this is my ward and precinct. Which is, oh, well, we didn't think it was your signature. Well, you can fill out a form in the form of an affidavit or something that you don't necessarily have to get notarized. You just get a witness and either scan it and email it in or call them and, you know, do something to say that I did. So they can then correct it, but only the voters can. And then there'll be a final accounting of it. And we'll know. To me, that's the better way to do it.
And I agree, because I've had a lot of texts of a lot of people call and say, look, I signed it. I want to make sure they counted my vote. And mm-hmm. I want them to tell me if it was discounted. I want them to tell me why.
Exactly. And that's what they should do. When the registrar would publish this list, he or she would say, this is the, and they would put a, you know, like a, they could use footnotes or whatever, but A, B, C, D, E for the reasons, you know, signature did not match or whatever, or, you know, date was wrong or no witness or whatever, you know, and they need to explain why each one was invalidated. And I hope it would satisfy my friends in the news media about public records, because making it public record from day one exposes this to intimidation.
Well, it's a vote. I mean, it's really an expression of desiring that there be a vote. And we, you know, the state law treats it as though it's a proposition. We don't reveal, you know, whether people are voting up, down, or otherwise in propositions. And again, this all works to the benefit of the candidate to go out and reach out to people and, you know, try and change their mind and remove it in that 5-day period. You know, it's all ripe for abuse. Quite frankly, if it didn't cost so much money and you filed this petition, I'd like there to be two dozen voting booths. You go in, we follow what we do for elections, and we vote whether or not we want to recall election or not. You know,
that's an interesting
idea. And that way we use this, you know, the sacrosanct nature of the way that we conduct elections. If we want to be serious about this, now it's not as convenient as going to the, you know, a neighborhood corner and signing a petition. I get it. But, you know, if that's the balance,
feel strongly enough about it, they'll do it. You know?
Absolutely. And that would be the balance of interest. We'll continue this conversation with Clancy Dubose, political editor and columnist for Gambit and WWL TV political analyst. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And in the aftermath of this recall petition failing, the response has been very interesting. The mayor says clearly a weight lifted, no doubt about that. But what is evident is that there has been an intentional effort to discredit me as mayor, and it comes from all sides and angles, from those who are elected officials and those who are not, and I expect it to continue. Clancy, I would venture to say that may be the most truthful statement that she made, that she expects it to continue.
Yeah, she concedes that it was not just a Republican conspiracy, that it was everybody. Well, you know, if everybody's out to get you, then maybe you have done something wrong.
Yeah.
Let me go back just for a second. We were talking about how the law might change. I was going to add one more suggestion. I think if you have a six-month period in a city like New Orleans, I think once a month, the recall, and this is putting some accountability on the recall organizers, every 30 days, they have to submit what they've got. And you can do a rolling count so that, you know, they come on at the end saying we only need 1,029 signatures. That was a lie. When the 180 days was done, they turned in 34,000 signatures, way more than 1,029. I mean, I just
well,
it'd be accountability on both, and it wouldn't be public record. Just but the number.
But it,
would be
but
public.
It may not. It so may not public. Have been. It may not have been a lie, because the second tranche of ballots that were turned in by Belden on day five of the grace period, most of those, I'm told, were dated prior to the 5-day grace period. And I think what we're going to find
period was to specifically ask, and the law is very clear on that.
No. I understand. Let me finish. I understand that. So
okay.
what somebody screwed up, somebody had
Thank
possession
yes.
of a lot of ballots that they were counting those signatures, and they didn't turn them in on the last day. And
well, to me,
you know,
I think they didn't arrive until after the 22nd, even though they were signed earlier. They didn't arrive because of the mail.
So they may have had those signatures, and you know I think there were 15 signatures on a piece of paper. So if you take that number, that's over 2,000 sheets of paper, right? Somebody screwed up somewhere in turning this in. You know, that would be the minimum. All right, it could be greater than that number.
Right, of course. And let me add some more factual information. I know from talking to Rick Farrell after they turned him in. They turned in everything they had. He said, we ran to the post office and grabbed what we could, and we didn't even have time to scan them, which is why they gave the Times-Picayune 32,000 names. And I think what they got on the last day or two going to the post office was another 2,500 names. But if you look at It was just shy of 10,000 pages, and it had 32,000 signatures. So that's about 3.2, 3.25 signatures average per page. So if they had another 34,000, it was probably more like, you know, another 10 or 11,000 pages. And somebody screwed up. I think if they'd have had them on the 22nd, they would have turned them in. And they just didn't have them. And they were trying to get them in. Either they didn't have them, or they had them and somebody really screwed up.
Yeah.
And that's my point. I think if you have a requirement, and we want to protect the voters from bad actors who are in office, but we should also protect people who are in office doing a good job, but somebody just doesn't like them because they're a political opponent. That's why I would require that. If you sign it, if you're a petition organizer, you must turn it in within 30 days, you know,
yeah.
so that
no,
it
I,
can be verified. And wait,
I,
and they know it gives,
I,
it,
I
helps,
agree.
It helps both sides. It helps
yeah,
both
I agree.
Sides because they can announce the number, and if somebody's not valid, they can say, well, why not? And they say, well, they got the wrong date or something. So they can go back and correct it. You don't need the 5-day grace period.
And if you use my voting machine solution.
Yeah. Oh,
the state itself can reveal those numbers. I want to
That's
get to
right.
the aftermath here of the mayor, you know, saying that this has been an intentional effort to discredit her as mayor. What's interesting about her, she takes no ownership of anything, of any
right.
failures or otherwise. She continues to do it. She continues to be defiant. You know, she had a classic. She had a great opportunity when the crew of Tux did the mea culpa. They exhibited credible leadership. They disciplined the rider. They expelled him from the crew. You know, she made this big deal about it. She responded with the same gesture that was given to her, You know, and I asked the question, what do you tell an 8 or a 9-year-old when they see this kind of conduct? And she misses more opportunities to take ownership of her action and continues to be the perpetual victim. And it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to play out.
Well, you know, it's Cat Doucette, the legendary sheriff in St. Landry Parish, used to say, Shad, that's the difference between ass and class. You know, the classy thing to do would have been to say, I accept their apology and I appreciate it. And, you know, we're all good now, you know, and something like that. What does it cost you? My dad used to tell me this all the time. It costs you nothing to be nice. Right. Yeah. What does it cost you? It costs you nothing. It actually makes you look stronger, not weaker, you know.
Yeah.
But some people don't know how to do it.
She makes the following statement. The PIB investigation is one we can stand by. It has been very thorough talking about the situation with Jeffrey Vapi. One, I would say, is a witch hunt. What? What does that mean? We're giving it credit in the first words. It's been very thorough. But I have to say, now it's a witch hunt?
Well, no, the other thing is, this investigation is still ongoing. She shouldn't even know what it's about. Or whether it's good or bad. She should have no knowledge of that, nor should you or I or anybody else. It's an investigation. It's not subject to public record because it's an ongoing investigation. Why does she even know whether it's good or bad? I mean, think about that admission, Newell. You're in law enforcement.
Exactly. You know? And then she goes on to say, I'm just hopeful the investigation will come to an end. And this is unbelievable. And that people will stay in their lane and focus on the work ahead. What does that mean? Stay in their lane.
Talk about stay in their lane. Talk about pot, meat, kettle.
it's the
disconnect from reality. All right, let me tell you something that an eyewitness gave me. An eyewitness I know, someone I used to work with, was in Herb Saint restaurant yesterday. I went there for lunch to meet some friends. The mayor walks in at about 12:20, 12:30, blows kisses to some people, goes and sits down at a table by herself and orders a glass of white wine, pulls out her phone and starts looking at the phone, messages or texts or whatever. Sat there by herself, drinking a glass of white wine. This was after her news conference yesterday. So what lane was that?
Yeah. Now, again, I just, you know, and then members of the council saying some similar things about the divisiveness and this and that. And it's like there was only one person making it divisive, and that was the mayor.
Yep.
By calling this Republican conspiracies and everything else that goes along with that.
No, she corrected that. She said, now they're coming, everybody's coming at me.
Yeah, well, yeah, so, exactly. Well. So we're off of that. We're off of that for sure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you,
Lancey Dubose.
Always a pleasure.
Always enjoy the conversation. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back, folks. Joining us on the line, Trey Burvant, Louisiana Film and Entertainment Association. He performed in Get Out in 2017 and CIS New Orleans in 2014. We know about how Hollywood South has been an important part of our microeconomy down here in the southeastern end of Louisiana. There's talk about a possible Hollywood writers' strike. That's that rumor's starting to spread. So we wanted to go straight to the folks that would know. Trey Burvant, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, thanks for having me.
So, Trey, what are you hearing?
Well, I think it's, you know, the unions. We have an industry that is unionized mostly with the actors, Screen Actors Guild. I myself am in it, the writers and the directors, and of course, all the workers on the set are unionized. And every 3 years, right, these contracts come up for renewal. The Writers Guild, Screen Actors Guild, and the Directors Guild all come up every 3 years at the same time. So, you know, the Writers Guild contract expires first. And I think the biggest thing you need to know, firstly, is how writers make their money. They either write their own script and they sell it and it gets produced. They get hired to write a script or a TV show. It gets produced. And then when things get produced, they are vested in the life of that show. So in the form of residuals, kind of the downstream mailbox money way to make money. And if you remember, before streamers, a television show would go into syndication, right? A studio would make the show, then they would sell off and license that to other networks and other third parties and earn a fee. And that fee was then distributed amongst all the folks that were invested in it, the producers, the writers, the actors, et cetera, et cetera. Well, so when you have streaming come on, and there was a case, so Netflix basically has their own streaming, makes their own content, puts it on their own platform. So there's no real opportunity if your show is a big hit to earn additional revenues because Netflix isn't selling that to syndication, right? Their revenue is based on subscriptions. So there's a big disparity now that the writer's saying, hey, look, we get you're trying to get us on upfront fees, but it's that downstream residual life, long-term life of the product that I made that we really need to talk about. And that's kind of what the central crux is of the conversations.
And the Netflix productions, are a lot of these writers actually hired, or they bring concepts and scripts?
Both. Yeah, it's both. So you can go and pitch your concept to Netflix. They decide to buy it and produce it. Great. Netflix hires you to develop something. It's the same concept. The difference is how it gets distributed, and how during distribution there are many opportunities for writers to make money when it gets sold or gets watched. I mean, you know, you fly domestic airlines, you get in the seat and you see that little screen there, and you can just dial through. Well, those every time, you know, they sell it to airlines, there's money that goes downstream to actors, writers, directors, etc.
Right. The revenue stream, though, with the streaming services, though, is different, right? Is is formulated differently.
It is. I think, you know, the last time there was a strike was, I think, 2003, and it's when this whole new form called digital media, they were calling it. Like, what's digital media? We don't know what it is. And now here we are. We know what digital media is. We know what streaming is. We know how it gets monetized. And I think they're just looking to have a better structure in the downstream participation in the content that they make, because it's their intellectual property that is getting purchased, just like an actor's intellectual property is their visage, their person.
So does that same issue exist for actors?
Sure. I mean, SAG will be going and negotiating probably later in, I think, April they might start, or May they start their negotiations. I know that they'll be dealing with a lot of the same thing, residuals, work times, raising rates to match, the regular cost of living increases and those types of things. I'm not sure exactly what SAG is looking to go to the table with at this moment, but yeah, they have a lot of the same issues.
How does this work out with the balance of interest? I mean, you know, a lot of the streaming services, some are actually struggling. Some are increasing the fees for the streaming service. Some as high as 100% increases for these things. And the fallout is the subscriber rate for many are on the downside.
Yeah, I know. I think the market still has to figure out, I mean, the market of the studios and the producers and of how to strike that balance again without, right, theatrical exhibition as the driver of revenues anymore. They're basing it off of subscriptions. And I don't quite think that, you know, that's panned out as good as they've wanted it to. I know there's been a lot of restructuring at some of the majors this past fall and going into the spring. Disney had a big shakeup, bringing back Bob Iger to the mix to kind of to right the ship again. So you're absolutely right. And I don't have an answer of where it's going to go, but you're spot on saying that there's a big thing to figure out about how are they going to continue to create good content, which any show can cost upwards to $30 to $80 million to make, and how you recoup that investment.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you that I predominantly watch stuff now on the streaming services. It's rare that I go watch just broadcast TV any longer. I spend a lot of time watching BBC productions on digital services.
Oh, the BBC rolls a lot in our household, too. My wife loves a good BBC murder mystery.
Yeah, I mean, it's not somebody getting shot every 30 seconds. It's more of a development of a story, and intrigue. And that's what I enjoy about it, especially coming from the police world. The other stuff drives me crazy. But, the pattern and the habits of the audience are changing. But I'm not happy about the price structure either, because when I start looking at BritBox and this and that and getting all of these subscriptions, thinking that I was going to be saving some money maybe if I reduced what my digital package was for Cox, it's not working out so good.
I know. Yeah. You know, well, it's kind of the same thing, right? I mean, Everything just kind of circles back to the same way. I mean, no matter how you slice it, the way that film and television shows make money is through theatrical exhibition and selling ads and selling their product to other people who want to license their product. It's a real conundrum, man. And yeah, I mean, you know, maybe what we should do is, Norm, you and I should start a company that aggregates all of the streamers and sells it in a package, a streaming package, kind of like a cable package.
Yeah, I think Apple's probably going to be the first one to market on that.
They're a very healthy company. They're a very healthy company.
Yeah, yeah. Tough competitor. Trey, thank you so much. We'll be checking in with you as this pans out, because this could end up being a big battle, right?
It could be. And you know, look, we're feeling the effects of it. The entire world is feeling, the entire United States is feeling the effects of it. There's a lot of production that's pressing pause. A lot of studios don't want to, like, enter into production and know that their writers are going to go down So we're seeing a pause in production, which, you know, affects the jobs and families here
Absolutely.
In Louisiana. And we're hoping that there's a quick resolution. And we know that we might experience another big boom of production when the strike gets resolved, because they're going to be anxious to start making content again.
Thank you so much for joining us and backfilling on this issue. Trey Bervant, Louisiana Film and Entertainment Association. Trey, thank you. Have a great week.
You too, man.
We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, folks. We've got a lot still in today's lineup. At 12:30, we'll visit with Greg McBride, Senior VP and Chief Analyst at Bankrate.com. We'll talk about the Fed Reserve raising its benchmark interest rate by a quarter percentage point, despite the stress hitting the banking system. What are they saying about this helping and curbing high inflation? Troy Henry joins us in the beginning of the 12 o'clock hour. He is the developer of the old Six Flags site in New Orleans East, Bayou Phoenix, as it is referred to. We'll get the latest on that. Coming up next, right after the top of the news break, we got a lot to talk about. New stomach bug floating around. Is not responding to antibiotics. A lot of issues are in and around COVID. Some new ways to distribute methadone and dealing with opioid disorders with Dr. Joe Cantor.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.